Back to the Wall, Chained to Sun. A Stranger Things fic written by Emrys and read by C. Welsh, with music from Paxac. This fic is rated teen and up audiences, with relationships Steve Harrington, Eddie Munson, and Robin Buckley and Steve Harrington, with additional tags that include alternate universe canon divergence, interdimensional communication, and fix it of sorts. Author notes, thank you to my mini steady army for affectionately bullying me into writing this fic. Summary. The thing is, Eddie doesn't think you can die in the Upside Down. Not that he knows fuck all about the Upside Down. All he knows is that he is still inside it, and he is not dead. Chapter 1. Hawkins, 1983. The thing is, Eddie doesn't think you can die in the Upside Down. Not that he knows fuck all about the Upside Down. All he knows is that he is still inside it, and he is not dead. Eddie wakes up in his bedroom, and for a split second, he thinks it was all just a dream. Chrissy, the monsters, the interdimensional portal that lives in his living room. Then he opens his eyes and is smacked back down into reality with the cold wetness of his room around him. The vines that crawl across the floor and the putrid air, specks of whatever the fuck floating around in the air. He bolts upwards and a sharp pain forms in his side and crawls up into his ribs, causing him to hiss. Right. Falling back down on the bed, Eddie lifts his shirt, fearing the absolute worst. But somehow, he is all right. Well, honestly, it looks pretty damn nasty, all raised and red and bruised. But at least he's not bleeding. He reaches a hand up to his neck as well, and finds the wounds there. No blood comes away, though. It's as if his skin has been healing, which doesn't make sense. None of this makes any sense. He remembers being attacked by the bats. He remembers his flesh tearing away from his body. Eddie remembers not running. He remembers being brave for once in his goddamn life. He died, right? Didn't he die? He remembers Henderson's voice screaming out for him. Poor fucking kid. But he doesn't remember how he ended up here, though, in his bedroom of all places. He doesn't think Henderson would have been strong enough to move him. Moving slowly, Eddie manages to sit upright. He finds beside the bed Harrington's bat filled with nails, along with his makeshift shield. Harrington. Fuck. He grabs both and pulls himself into a standing position. Okay, he definitely isn't 100%, but he can stand. So whatever is going on with his body must not be that bad. Okay, he thinks. Okay. He can work with that, maybe. His hand grips the handle of his bedroom door. All he has to do is get to the portal and crawl back through it. But from the other side, he hears a sickening clicking sound. Something's there, and he holds his breath. Fuck. He feels the panic rise in his chest. He's trapped, fucking trapped. Where was everyone? Henderson? Harrington? Even Buckley or Wheeler would be good right about now. He isn't stupid enough to call out, and he knows now, all fucking hive mind. So the wrong move and Eddie will really die. Unless he's already dead, and this is hell. He tips his head back in silent, hysterical laughter. Isn't this just peachy? Eddie eyes the window, except he and Henderson fucking covered it up. Feeling a bit faint, Eddie stumbles back over to his bed. He's in a bad way now, he realises. There's no one here with him. They all just left him here. Hot tears sting Eddie's eyes. He can't believe they all just left him here. But then again, maybe it shouldn't be a surprise. Maybe it was all part of some plan. Get rid of Eddie the freak. Eddie the queer. Eddie the murderer. He buries his face in his hands. What the fuck is he going to do now? There's no way he can stay here. His room may still be standing, but there was something on the other side of it. It wouldn't be long until he made a wrong move and whatever it was came through. He has to run. Again. He just has to. There's no other option. There's the door to the backyard. All he would have to do is open his bedroom door and there would be an escape route right there. He takes a few steadying breaths. He doesn't know how long he stands there contemplating on whether or not he's going to be brave for once in his fucking life. And then he moves. He opens the door slowly, quietly, his shield out in front of him. He's holding his breath. Trying not to make a single sound. He can see the gate from down the hall, and surrounding it is a single, tall, lanky creature. Its back is facing him, spindly spine and all, and... Okay, good. That's good, then, he thinks. He just has to run, but he can't take his eyes off the thing. Henderson explained it all to him one night before the end of it all. Demogorgon. He thinks it must be. He moves slowly into the room, hand reaching towards the backyard door handle. He wrenches it open and bolts. He hears a terrifying squeal from the trailer behind him, but Eddie can't look back, doesn't look back. He just has to keep moving. He doesn't think he has ever run faster in his life. Not even that one time he almost got busted by the cops for dealing back in 84. He bolts into the forests, somehow avoiding the trails of vines everywhere. Fucking hive mind. Fuck this shit. Once he's deep in, Eddie stops. He drops to the ground on his knees, panting, out of breath. He feels like he could vomit, and his ribs are on fire. His throat is so fucking dry and he doubts there's anything good to drink around here. He lays down on the cold, wet ground and stares up at the sky. He wishes he could just stay here. He wishes he could just close his eyes and this would all be a dream. But here isn't safe either. Nowhere is. Eddie starts to walk. It's his only option. Not a lot of choices available to him here in hell, huh? At least he was used to wandering around Hawkins. He used to do it all the time before he got the van, before Mom left and he ran from his dad's. It was his only solace, his only escape, was being able to walk around Hawkins for hours to clear his head. This, though... This is not peaceful, nor does it make Eddie feel any fucking better. In fact, it could be the worst walk of his whole life. He doesn't know where to go. He doesn't know what to do. At least the last time he was in this situation, he had people to follow. Wheeler, in particular. Because fuck what Buckley said, Nancy Wheeler was definitely in charge. At some point, he gets into the Hawkins suburbs. Not somewhere he often went or enjoyed visiting. People have always given him funny looks. But he recognises the area. He's definitely been here before, late night deals and all that. So far, there's been no sign of any more monsters or bats or, what scares Eddie the most, Vecna. The only thing he can think of is to at the very least get out of the open, so he goes deeper into the rows of houses until he stumbles upon one he definitely recognises. The Harringtons. He's actually been there a few times, only when he was trying to make a few bucks selling to all the jocks. But that was only outside. He doesn't know why or how he ended up here, and even though Eddie shouldn't care whose house he enters to hide in, knowing that he sort of knows Harrington now makes it easier for him to force the door open and walk in. Eddie lets out a low whistle. Even covered in upside-down shit, it's a nice place. There's an entryway, a sitting room off to the side. Who the fuck needs a room just to sit? Whatever. He scopes out the place as best he can. There's minimal vine coverage, so it's easy to get around, and the area seems pretty devoid of any nasty, creepy crawlies of alternate dimension. It's better than nothing, and Eddie pretty much has nothing. He ends up in what he thinks is Harrington's room, the thought of which makes him laugh quietly to himself. At least he's still laughing. Eddie had honestly never given Steve Harrington much thought until Dustin wouldn't shut the fuck up about the guy. Sure, Eddie knew who he was. Everyone knew everyone in Hawkins, and everyone knew who King Steve was. But to Eddie, Harrington was just an annoying popular guy who was a year younger than him. He was pretty damn certain Harrington never gave Eddie much thought either. But as Eddie had reluctantly admitted, Steve was a pretty good guy. Which Eddie still maintains is unfair by all Munson standards of laws of the universe. Eddie lets out a shaky breath and goes to sit on the edge of the bed. Only a moment after, restless, he stands and looks out the window to an empty pool in the back. He doesn't like it, he realises. It gives him the creeps. He goes to sit back down on the bed. Now that he's alone and as safe as he is going to be, he lets himself fall apart, just a little. He lays down on the bed, pulling his knees up to his chest. It's cold around him. He remembers that from the last time he was in the Upside Down. He doesn't think he's going to get any warmer anytime soon. He cries. Eddie hates crying, but there's no one here to see him do it, and there's no one to yell at him for it afterwards. He digs the heels of his palms into his eyes and presses until it hurts just a little bit. They grow slippery and wet under his eyes until he has to pull them away. He tries to figure out his options. He could try and find another gate. He even half considered it, but he can't. He just can't. He doesn't think he would make it, and he's scared. Still, Eddie is too goddamn scared to do anything except run away and hide. And how he's probably going to die here, in a demon dimension version of Steve Harrington's bedroom. Then, there is the matter of Steve Harrington. How, within a few short days, maybe even hours, he had managed to worm his way into most of Eddie's waking thoughts. Eddie shouldn't be this predictable, he thinks. To crush, how he fucking hates that word, on the first guy who is nice to him. But he is, and he does. He thinks of that final moment when he last saw Steve. Make him pay. A nod between them. Eventually, and because there isn't anything else to do, Eddie sleeps. He doesn't know how long he sleeps for, but when he wakes, it's to the faint murmuring of voices. He tries to ignore it for a few minutes. He just wants to sleep. He just wants to sleep until this nightmare ends. But then he hears...
Don't ask me.
That's Harrington's voice. Eddie sits up, a little sleep-addled. But that definitely was Harrington's voice, wasn't it?
My dad will literally kill me if I don't pass this next math test.
That was Buckley.
And you think it's a good idea to ask me for help? I barely graduated.
Harrington again. Eddie rubs his eyes. He whispers, "Guys, hello?" Their conversation appears to continue, talking and bickering at one another like they tend to do. Eddie tries again. "Seriously, guys, hello?" He bites on his bottom lip. He can't. He shouldn't be too loud, should he? It's only a matter of time until he's dead and gone in here, and it would be worse to get eaten by one of those monster things. But these two worlds, they were connected. Eddie can hear whatever is going on, and whatever he is hearing is happening. And Eddie thinks, for maybe the first time since he woke up here alone, that he could maybe have a chance. But he isn't seeing anything in the room that could help him. Everything seems cold and desolate. There is none shone in golden light. There is nothing to use. And then...
How can you just go back to studying for math tests?
That's Steve. There's a quick pause.
I have to pass math, Steve.
Another pause, maybe a scoff.
What is it?
Robin asks.
What's really going on?
There is another bout of silence. Eddie can't help but think, maybe the guy just really doesn't like math.
Hello?
Comes Robin's voice.
Earth to Steve. You gonna let me know what's going on inside there?
Next comes Harrington.
If there is anything.
His light-hearted tone sounds forced, like he was trying to land a joke, but it didn't go right.
Steve, I can't stop thinking about Eddie.
Oh, that wasn't what Eddie was expecting to hear. Robin doesn't say anything either.
Can't stop thinking about him and how we just left him there, Robin. We had to get out. And Dustin was hurt. I know, okay, but I just...
Eddie holds his breath.
We left him there, and I can't stop thinking about it. He's dead, Steve.
Robin says gently.
I know he's dead.
His voice sounds thick and forced, as if Steve Harrington, varsity jock, stupidly great hair, King Steve... was crying over him. Was he crying over him? Eddie hears Robin's gentle,
"Oh shit, Steve,"
in response, then nothing except for gentle shuffling and sniffling. It all makes sense now, why they left him down here. They thought he was dead. Of course, Eddie thought the same until he woke back up, so of course they all thought the same. And they were forced to leave his body behind. That's... wow. That's just wow. Eddie thinks again where he woke up. His own bed, his own trailer. Before, he thought it strange. Henderson wouldn't have been able to move him. He wonders if it was Steve, then. The idea of it makes something flip around in his stomach. He shakes his head. He can't focus on that right now. But the idea of them moving him, putting him in his bed, not just leaving him there out in the open where anything in the upside down could grab him. Eddie thinks of his closed bedroom door. The way they set him up in there, like his own fucking crypt. Jesus Christ.
Sorry.
Eddie hears Steve's choked voice wasp through the air again.
I didn't mean to. We don't apologise for that, remember? Yeah, emotions are natural, yada yada.
Eddie hears a smack.
How?
It actually makes Eddie smile. Then Steve says,
I want to go get him. Bring him back.
Eddie's heartbeat picks up. Deliriously, he thinks, yes, come get me.
The gates are guarded by all the those government people now. They would never let you get close, plus... What? I'm not trying to be mean, Steve, I promise. It's just... That's not Eddie anymore. And what if he's not in any condition to be brought back?
Fuck that. They're talking about his fucking corpse, aren't they? The thought of it makes Eddie lightheaded. They're so certain that he's dead. And if they come, and Eddie isn't where they left him...
His uncle deserves to have something to bury, doesn't he?
Eddie doesn't think he can stand listening to another fucking second of it. He escapes out of the bedroom and down the hall, slumping down on the floor and putting his head between his knees. This is so fucked up. How has he ended up here? A week or two ago, well, who knows how long he's been here, he was just your normal, anxiety-ridden 20-year-old hidden queer high school student. 86 was supposed to be his fucking year. He doesn't want to think about the people who he inevitably would have left behind. Especially his uncle. Wayne is the only person who has ever been there for Eddie. Ever. More of a dad than his own actually was, and a part of his childhood memories more than his mom ever could be. The thought of Wayne alone in their trailer fucking kills Eddie. He wanders the Harringtons' house for a while. It's weird. Since the Upside Down is supposedly stuck in 1983, it's like a weird time capsule of the golden age of King Steve. He finds sports gear strewn across the laundry room floor, a varsity jacket thrown over the back of a door handle. All of it covered in whatever kind of disgusting demon goo. He finds on the kitchen table a note, barely legible, ink bleeding out. But Eddie can still read it.
Stephen, your father and I are away for his conference. We will be back in 3 days. We better not hear wind of any so-called parties while we're gone. Your mom.
Eddie swallows around a strange lump in his throat. Eventually, he goes back to Harrington's room. It's quiet again. Eddie can't hear anyone anymore. He decides to just lay down again. It was safe enough. A bed is a bed, he supposes. Even a bed in an alternate dimension. He closes his eyes for a few minutes. He thinks maybe he drifts in and out of sleep again. Not that he's even remotely tired, but this is just so much that he needs to shut off for a while. Oh, you've got to be fucking kidding me, Eddie says aloud. Of course Harrington listens to Wham. Eddie can't believe he's going to die here with fucking Wham of all things playing in the background. Maybe this really is hell. Eddie's skin prickles. He can't listen to this shit anymore. He gets up and crosses the room, and for the hell of it, presses stop on the music player. The music stops. So does Eddie. After a moment, the music starts again. Eddie presses stop. The music stops. He hears,
"What the fuck is wrong with this thing?"
And then the music starts again. Eddie takes a deep breath. He waves his hand around the player more, and unmistakably, just like at Wheeler's, the gold shimmering particles form in the air around the player. So, the only thing Eddie can think of is going full balls to the walls insane on the cassette player. He fiddles with the volume, he stops and starts the song, fast forwards, rewinds.
Thank you.
poltergeist-level shit. It's the only thing he can think to do to say, this is not a technology thing. This is me, Harrington. It's fucking me. Pay attention. Whispered through the air is...
What the...
Yes, Eddie says out loud. Can't stop himself from trying to talk. Yes, what the fuck? It's not normal, right, Harrington? This is fucking weird. Pay attention. He cranks the volume for a split second before turning it right down again. Doesn't want to draw too much outside attention, but he has never, never wanted Harrington's attention more than he does right now. Eddie spins around, looking for anything else in the room he can fuck with. He spots a lamp right next to the bed. He goes over to it, and the gold air forms. He shoves his hand right into it, not gentle like they were at the Wheelers. This is no time to be gentle. He needs Steve to know where he is right now. The light around his hand hums. He takes his hand out so it can stop, and then does it again. He can't hear anything from the other side. It feels too quiet. God, what if Steve isn't even in the room? What if he left? Eddie starts to tap out SOS again. Not that Harrington knows it, but maybe, just maybe, he'll recognize it. Then he hears it. Steve's voice, panicked, saying,
Hello.
Come on, Harrington, Eddie murmurs. He digs his hand into the particles further, squeezes his fist tight, hoping it gives him something more. The silence is palpable. Eddie swears he can hear Steve's breathing, the tension between them. Come on, come on, come on, Eddie thinks. You can fucking do it. You can figure it out.
Eddie?
Eddie could cry. Yes, he whispers. Yes. It's me, Steve. It's me. He puts his hand back into the light, flexing and squeezing and moving his fingers around. It pulsates. It beats. Like a fucking heart.
Holy fuck.
Chapter 2, Hawkins, 1986. Holy fuck, Steve whispers. His breathing comes in and out unevenly. He feels like he's run 10 miles. How could that be Eddie? Because he had seen Eddie dead. He had seen Dustin over his body sobbing. He had. Hadn't he? It had been almost 2 weeks since he last saw Eddie alive. 2 weeks and he hasn't been able to stop dreaming about the way Eddie was lying there in Dustin's arms. The way it felt as if the whole world had been dropped out from under Steve's feet. They had won, hadn't they? If they had won, why was Eddie dead? There was no pulse. Nancy checked because Steve had been too frozen to do it, and there was the matter of Dustin to take care of, hysterical and sobbing. He's just 15 years old, Steve remembers thinking. He was just a kid. He shouldn't have to see any of this shit. Then Nancy had said there was no pulse, and she and Robin had managed to get Dustin back into the trailer, back up through the portal, and Steve had taken Eddie and put him in his bedroom. He had laid him out on the bed, he had brushed his hair off his face, and then, with the gentle urging of Robin's hand, closed the bedroom door behind him. And now it's been 2 weeks, and Steve's tape player is going off the rails, and his lights are flickering, and it's rhythmic, heart-beating, and too coincidental, too human, to be anything like a Demogorgon or Vecna or something else entirely. Steve runs. He'll feel bad about it later, but right now, he needs to breathe. He needs to figure this shit out. He needs to know it's Eddie. Because what if it's not? What if? He drives and eventually finds himself leaning on the Wheeler's doorbell until Mike answers. "Nancy's not here," he says. "I'm not," Steve pants, gasping for breath. "I'm not here for Nancy. Can I borrow your sister's light bright?" "What? Why?" Steve groans, teeth grinding. He forgot how infuriating Wheeler could be. I need it, okay? Can I just fucking borrow it?" "I guess," Mike says, and Steve is barreling into the front hallway, spinning around looking for it. "Holy fuck, dude, calm down. It's in the living room. Better to take it now while Holly's out with my mom." Steve finds it on the floor and hooks it under his arm, the basket of plastic light pegs gripped in his other hand. "You're seriously not going to tell me why you need to steal my kid sister's toy? My niece is over. You're an only child. Robin's niece is over. At your house?" Steve is outside already, dumping the light bright onto his passenger seat and slamming the door shut. "Look, Wheeler, I'll let you know if you need to know, okay? Thanks for letting me take it. I promise I'll bring it back." Mike rolls his eyes, standing in the doorway. "Whatever," he says, and shuts the front door. Steve drives back home probably way too fast. He still doesn't feel like he can breathe right, still feels out of his mind. But if it really is him, if it really is, then Eddie could come home and... God, Steve doesn't think he can even let himself daydream about it yet. He slams into his room, calling out, "Eddie? Eddie? Are you there, man? I'm sorry I left, but I just had to get something. Eddie?" The next movements are followed like clockwork. He remembers what Dustin said he had done, because he couldn't help bragging about it later on, cocky little fucker. He sits down in front of the music player. Steve begins to fill the light bright screen with pegs. It takes way too long with the way his hands are still shaking, but he manages to do it. Then he plugs in the light bright. "Please be here," Steve murmurs under his breath. Then he says, "Okay, Eddie, it's just like last time, okay? It's plugged in. Fuck. You need to know where I am. I'm in my room, sitting in front of the music player. Like, I'm facing it and my back is to the door, yeah? I'm..." The light bright flickers. Steve holds his breath. Okay, I'm gonna unplug it now, man. Hold on." He does. Then, in front of him, it spells out WHAM? Wham? Steve thinks he could laugh until he cries. "Holy shit. Okay," Steve breathes out. "Okay, man, I have to know 100% that it's you. Can't make any mistakes when it comes to alternate dimensions with monsters, right? So just, I'm gonna ask you a question that only you and I will know the answer to, okay?" When he doesn't receive an answer, he takes it as a yes. "Who did you say I was like when I bit the bat? Back when I was attacked? You told me I was like someone. Who was it?" It takes a moment, and then unmistakably comes the answer. O-Z-Z-Y. Ozzy. Steve lets out a hysterical, choked laugh. Jesus Christ, Eddie, we thought you were dead. How are you not dead? The light bright doesn't say anything. Steve realises it was probably too difficult of a question to answer in short bursts. He rubs his hands down his face. Fuck, dude, I'm sorry. I wish I could just talk to you. I wish I could just hear you. Simpler questions, I guess. I assume you're alive? Y-E-S. Yes. Are you hurt? N-O-T-B-A-D. Not bad. Steve takes a deep breath. Are you stuck? Y-E-S. Yes. Steve nods like Eddie could even see him. Okay, he whispers. He squeezes his eyes tight shut, tries not to panic. Are you safe where you are? S-O-F-A-R. So far. Stay there, okay? Don't go anywhere. Listen, man, I'm sorry, but I gotta go again, okay? I have to tell people who can help. I'll come back though, I promise, I promise. There's a long moment after Steve finishes talking and he panics for a second. Panics that something has happened and Eddie is gone. And then the light bright spells out, okay. Then S-C-A-R-E. D. Scared. Steve inhales sharply, thinks he really might cry again. Cry again over Eddie Munson. Don't be, he says, strained. Don't be scared. I'm gonna come. We're going to get you out of there. After a moment, he stands, stares at the light bright on the floor, and then leaves his room again. Except, he realises as he slams his car door shut and pulls out of his driveway, he doesn't know who the fuck to talk to. He doesn't know who he should go to. 11, maybe, but she's just a goddamn kid and she's probably so tired. The buyers are shacked up in a motel currently. There's been talk of them going back to California to complete the school year and then making the move back. But he's heard all that from Dustin, so who knows how much is accurate or remains to be true. Instead, he drives to Eddie's trailer. Well, Eddie's old trailer. In the absence of his nephew, Wayne Munson was given a new home and the Munson's old trailer was handed over to government types who deal with interdimensional portals. All of the murder sites are swarmed with teams now, both trying to figure out what to do with the gates and trying to bury the murder stories. He pulls up the dirt road and into the driveway. Getting out, he marches directly towards a group of people in suits standing in a circle and chatting. He notices Chief Hopper as one of them, which would be a shock if he hadn't already been filled in on the whole Russian prison survival aspect of the story. Hopper gives him a "what the fuck are you doing here" kind of look as multiple guards put their arms out to stop Steve from walking further towards the group. Steve struggles against them. No, listen, I need to get through. I need to talk to them. My name is Steve Harrington. I know you assholes have got it somewhere on file. I know all about this shit and I have to. He's good, Hopper says. The guards look back at him and some other guy in a suit nods at them and they let Steve fall forward and closer to the trailer. What are you doing here, kid? Hopper asks. Eddie, Steve says. Eddie Munson is alive and in the Upside Down. No one says anything, which pisses Steve right off. Did you hear me? Yeah, kid, we heard you, one of the men say. I'm not a fucking kid, Steve Albert shouts. You have to get a team set up and go down there and get him. He's in my house, my Upside Down house. He was attacked but somehow survived and we didn't notice but he is alive and we gotta go get him. And how do you know he's alive? Steve stares at them incredulously. The fucking lights, man. He's talking to me through the lights. I got a fucking light bright in there and everything. What do you mean?
Hopper, someone says. Hopper sighs. Yeah, I got him.
What? Hopper hauls Steve by the back of his shirt and pulls him back away from the trailer. Steve struggling the whole time. For a guy who spent the past couple months a prisoner, he's pretty damn strong still. What the fuck, Hopper? No! No, Eddie's in there! He points back at the trailer, almost screaming. He's fucking in there and he's alone, and if you won't go get him, I'll do it myself!
Come on, Hopper says, pulling Steve away back towards Max's trailer.
What the hell are you doing? Steve barks. Why aren't you believing me? I was listening to Wham and Eddie was mad. Probably doesn't like Wham, which is his prerogative, I guess. But the lights were flickering and he was talking to me and it was him. I checked. I asked him something only he and I would know.
You need to calm the hell down, Hopper hisses. And you gotta tell it to me slower.
Steve stops ranting. He takes a deep breath. He can't stop his hands from shaking. He feels like he's been on edge for fucking hours. But then he explains it, everything. The music player going haywire and the lights flickering and how it felt human and not monstrous. How they've used the light bright before when they were stuck and how he brought it back again and talked to Eddie. He's down there right now, Hopper, he... His voice breaks. He remembers the word scared getting spelled out in front of his eyes. Please, you gotta believe me. Hopper's hand comes and lands on his shoulder, squeezes it tightly.
I do, kid. I believe you. But right now there isn't much you can do. But I'll talk to the guys. We'll go get him, but first...
He nods his head towards Max's trailer.
Follow me.
Steve sighs, but follows him. Inside Max's trailer is Eleven and Joyce. Not exactly who he was expecting to see, but he supposes it's nice nonetheless. Joyce smiles and gives him a wave.
Hello, Eleven says when he enters. We are here getting Max some clothes.
Max had woken up a few days back now. Her vision luckily returns more and more every day, barring her bones healing right and after a few rounds of physical therapy. The doctors think she'll make it through okay.
Hey kid, Hopper says. Do you think you would be able to do Steve and I a quick favour before you two head out, if you're feeling strong enough?
Hop, Joyce starts, but Hopper holds a hand out.
Steve here thinks Eddie Munson is still in the Upside Down. I just want to make sure that it's him. Do you think you would be able to find him?
Eleven nods.
I can try. Where is he?
My house, Steve says.
Not that Eleven had ever been there, but she seems confident enough with Steve's answer that she doesn't ask for any more information. They get set up quickly. They turn the TV to a static station, and Eleven uses a dish towel to cover her eyes. Joyce motions for Steve to take a seat next to her, which she does. She puts an arm around him like a mother would, and Steve appreciates it, even though he admittedly doesn't know Joyce very well. The time ticks by slowly, but eventually Eleven says, I found him. I think he is waiting. And then, another few minutes later, she takes the dish towel off her eyes and uses it to wipe her nose. I couldn't talk to him. He couldn't hear me. But he is there. I don't think he is in any danger. Steve drops his head into his hands. Hopper says, thanks, kid.
Harrington, I'll talk to the guys over there. I'll see what we can do.
Steve's head shoots up. What we can do? I know exactly what we can do. We can go in there and go get him right now.
Unfortunately, we'll have to get it cleared.
How long will that take?
I'll work on them all night if I have to.
This is bullshit! Steve stands up, walks right up to Hopper's face. He's not the chief anymore. What's the worst he could do? Punch him? Steve has had worse. Hopper's face is stone. The lack of reaction makes Steve feel even angrier.
Go home, Harrington, Hopper says.
I will call you
when I've cleared it. Joyce comes up to him and puts a comforting hand on Steve's back, pulling him away. Come on, honey, you have to believe him. Steve points directly into Hopper's chest. If I wake up tomorrow morning and I haven't heard from you, I'm coming back here and I'm going in. Hopper, again, says nothing. Steve allows Joyce to guide him out of the trailer and back towards his car. He can be infuriating sometimes, can't he? Joyce says once Steve has opened his car door. The only thing he can do in response is just to scoff. I know the waiting is awful, she continues. But we know where he is, and Al said he seemed to be doing okay. Try and get some rest, okay? Steve feels utterly defeated. Yeah, he says. Sure. He gets in his car and drives away. Steve goes home to an empty house, which is not unusual. But this time, he knows that somewhere else and in another version of this world, Eddie is here. Which maybe should make him feel less lonely, but he doesn't. Not when Eddie is still there, in the Upside Down, and not just in Steve's house with him. When he gets back, it's starting to get dark. He goes to his room and sits on his bed. He makes sure to turn on the lamp. Eddie, he says to the air, I'm back. Are you there? He's not sure if it hurts him or heals him, but the lamplight surges quietly. Steve closes his eyes. I've told people who can help, but I can't get near the gate without their permission. I'm sorry, but we have to wait. I'm sitting here waiting for someone to call me back. Do you remember the old chief of police? The one who died in the mall fire? Long story short, he's not dead and his daughter's the one with the superpowers. He knows the people to talk to. He'll help get you out. Steve sniffs. He feels so fucking exhausted. This is not what he thought his day off would be like. He lays down on his bed now, eyes towards the lamp and the light bright on the floor. I'm so sorry, man. I would have dived straight in there if I could. The light swells next to him and then stops. Steve's heart hurts. I wish I could talk to you, he says. The unplugged light bright comes to life again. T-A-L-K. Talk. Steve laughs wetly. I don't know what to say. It's been a mess since you've been gone, man. And it's barely been 2 weeks. Vecna got Max and she barely made it out alive. She's doing better now. Woke up a few days ago and everything. I haven't been able to see her yet because all the other little twerps are flocking to the hospital. I've just left them to it for now. I thought I've been doing okay, Steve continues. I mean, this is, what, the 4th time I've been through this shit? But I just... It's getting harder. Every time it gets harder. And I don't know, you being dead really threw me for a fucking loop. I know we really only just met for real, you know, and not knowing each other through school, or you knowing me as the guy I was in high school. But you fit in, man. You fit in with all of us, and I really thought you were going to stick around. I really wanted you to. H-E-R-E. Here. Steve smiles. Yeah, dude, Dustin's going to totally flip. He really misses you. The silence washes over him. I really fucking missed you, if you can believe it. Eddie doesn't respond to that. Steve isn't sure how he would. He sits up and wanders back over to his music player. I'll play us something, yeah? No Wham this time, I promise. He sifts through a pile of tapes he has, settles on Rumours. He thinks Nancy gave it to him once, but he doesn't say that aloud. I hope you're okay with Fleetwood Mac.
When you're back, you can choose the next thing we listen to, okay? Whatever you want. Steve plays the tape and goes to lay back down on his bed. He wonders where Eddie is in his room right now. He wonders what he's thinking, what he thinks of Steve now. He rolls over on the bed. He can't look at the light bright any longer, waiting for it to say something. He thinks the talking might be over. On the opposite side of Steve's bed, the light surges gently. Steve reaches over to the empty side of the bed. It's cold underneath his touch. He falls asleep to Christine McVie singing Songbird. The next time Steve wakes, it's to the ringing of the phone. He jumps up in an instant and runs down the stairs and into the kitchen. Hello?
Are you going to tell me why the hell you took Holly's light bright?
Comes Nancy's voice from the opposite end of the phone. She sounds angry, which Steve thinks is probably fair. He says. Then inevitably trails off, still a little addled from sleep. It's dark outside. He wonders briefly what time it is. Then Nancy says,
Steve!
In a way he is all too familiar with, but thought that he had left behind a few years ago. Can you come over? Steve asks. I'll explain then, I promise. It takes a few minutes of convincing, but eventually Nancy agrees. Steve doesn't want to talk about this over the phone, and if Eddie is listening, he can only hope that Eddie is still okay. He wants him to know that there are so many people who are fighting for him to come home. In the downtime, Steve realises it's about 10 o'clock. He had slept for a few hours, and probably still had a few hours before he could start packing his own shit to go through the gates himself. Nancy shows up less than an hour later with Robin at her side. The two of them look furious. Care to explain, Dingus? Robin says. She's still dressed in her family video vest. Steve wonders if Nancy picked her up from work. Robin pushes herself past Steve and into the house. She quickly makes herself at home by going through Steve's fridge. Nancy gives her a strange look, like she's surprised at Robin's boldness, and steps in herself. They pile into the kitchen, Robin finding some bag of chips, and Steve sets out to explain the whole situation for them. His music player going off the fritz, the lights, that, yes, he stole a six-year-old's light bright, though he fully intends to return it, and that he talked to Eddie. It's clear they don't believe him at first. Nancy is looking at him in shock, and Robin looks more despondent and pitying. Steve doesn't know which one sets him on edge more. Are you sure it was? Nancy begins. Steve interrupts. I talked to Hopper and Eleven found him there. He's there and he's alive and I'm going crazy waiting for the call that they're going in. Why are they waiting so long? Robin asks. Stupid protocol or something? I don't know, Steve sighs, running a hand over his face. I'm going back in the morning if they don't call me back. We can't just let him wait there. Who knows what could happen? The three of them sit there in the silence of it. So, like, he's here right now? Robin asks, looking around Steve's kitchen with wide eyes. I mean, he's been up in my bedroom mostly, Steve shrugs. Robin raises an eyebrow at him. This is, Nancy breathes out. I really don't know how to wrap my head around this.
Tell me about it, Steve muses.
Eventually, Nancy has to apologetically collect the light bright. I'm sorry, Steve, but Holly's been asking for it all night and I promised my mum I'd bring it back. Steve waves her off, even though the idea of not being able to talk directly to Eddie makes panic begin to form in his chest. Call me when he's back, okay? Steve nods. Robin decides to stay with Steve. Says she already phoned her parents and said she was going to sleep over at Nancy's so they won't bother them at all. Steve gets Robin some clothes to sleep in. It's a typical routine for them by now. They settle on the couch under a blanket. Steve, even with a few hours of sleep at this point, feels exhausted. He thinks maybe Robin understands that. Actually, he knows Robin understands that. Robin is the only friend he has ever had who has been able to know exactly what he is thinking before he can say it. Sometimes before he can even feel it. Steve, she whispers. They're watching TV now, not anything in particular, just whatever is on at this time of night. Robin's head is tilted on his shoulder. Yeah? Do you like Eddie? Steve is about to answer. Of course I like Eddie. He's such a good guy and a great friend, and I want him around all the time. But something swirls in the base of his stomach. Nervousness, anxiety, fear, all wrapped up into something. Because he recognises Robin's voice now, and it sounds a lot like when she said it to him not even a year ago. She wouldn't stop looking at you. Yeah, he chokes out. I think I do. Robin takes his hand and they wait for the call. Chapter 3.
The End.
The Beginning. It's cold when Eddie waits. He doesn't hear much from Steve after he puts on Fleetwood Mac, and he thinks that's okay. It's getting too hard to talk to Steve with the light bright, and he doesn't know what to say. He doesn't know what to say when he is laying on Steve's bed and he can hear him right next to his face, as if they are laying beside each other. When Steve is telling him, I really wanted you to stick around. Eddie doesn't know what to do with any of that because he's still half thinking he's going to die here. That he is going to die and rot away in Steve Harrington's bed in an alternate dimension and that no one is going to find him. That no one is trying. Time passes weirdly here, or maybe it's the same and he just can't tell, because there is no way of telling the time. But he flinches with every strange noise he hears, and he still cries every once in a while because he is so goddamn scared. He thinks he hears muffled voices once from somewhere downstairs. He doesn't go to investigate. Later, he hears the front door open, and he just hopes it's Steve.
hopes it's someone coming to get him and not a monster, because logically they wouldn't use a door handle, but who knows, maybe they've got manners in the Upside Down. But he still can't believe, can't let himself live with that hope, because when Steve doesn't come, it won't kill him as bad. It's easier to live with the disappointment if you never expect anything less. Eddie lays curled on the bed with his back to the door. He doesn't move when it opens, and he doesn't move when something walks closer to him. He doesn't move when someone in a... Well, Eddie doesn't know what it is, but it looks like a goddamn astronaut is what it looks like. His eyes widen in fear. He doesn't know who this person is, and then... And then they're taking off the mask, and then... Then it's Steve. Holy fuck, he breathes out, and the two of them move in an instant. Steve's arms wrap around Eddie's shoulders, his hand is on the back of Eddie's head, and Eddie just lets himself be folded up in his arms like a stupid kid. He tries not to cry, but he doesn't think it works, but at least he doesn't think he's making too much noise. Eddie, Steve breathes against his ear. And then they're putting an oxygen mask on him, and it's Steve's voice that is saying, "It's okay, Eddie, it's okay, we've got you, I got you." The next time Eddie comes to, he's in a hospital room, and Steve is there, and Robin, and Nancy, and Dustin, and then eventually Wayne is there, which is the thing that finally makes whatever unbroken piece of him there is left shatter. Steve ushers everyone else out so the two of them can just have a moment together. Because Eddie hasn't seen Wayne since before Chrissy Cunningham was plastered on his ceiling, and Eddie thinks he's aged about 2 decades since that happened. It's a few days later, when things have calmed down, relatively, that Eddie sees Steve alone again. It's late. He's obviously just finished a shift at Family Video, and he comes in with a tape player and some tapes that he says he took from Eddie's pile at Wayne's trailer. "I told you you could choose the next thing we listen to." So Eddie smiles and chooses Led Zeppelin because he thinks Steve will like it, which he does. And he doesn't comment how at some point Steve reaches forward and links their hands together. Thank God Eddie has a private room and they're able to do this. "I'll be out of here tomorrow," Eddie tells him. At least that's what they're saying. "That's good," Steve murmurs. "Thanks," Eddie clears his throat. "Thanks for coming to get me." Steve gives him a strange look. "I had to, man. I would never have left you there if I had known." Eddie waves him off. Mistakes happen. He can't imagine the level of panic they were all feeling at the end of it all. And then they are looking at each other. Like, really looking. And Eddie thinks for a moment that it might happen. That he might be brave and he might kiss a boy. And then Steve leans forward and presses his lips to Eddie's forehead, a hand buried in Eddie's hair. Eddie closes his eyes. He reaches a hand and grips tightly onto Steve's wrist in his hair. "Do I," Steve whispers against his head, "do I have this wrong?" Eddie tilts his head up. He brings his own hand to the back of Steve's head, into his hair, and shakes his head. "No, no, you don't have it wrong." And then Steve kisses him. And he thinks, "Oh." He thinks it might be the beginning of something. The end. Author notes. How did Eddie survive the attack? Thank you so much for asking. I have no clue, heart. I just really wanted to write this fic. Something, something supernatural healing, something, something upside down glitch. Suspend your disbelief, and I hope you vibed. Title is from Black Sabbath's Die Young. I'm on Tumblr, at Emrys's, fandom blog, at Colin Morgan's. Reader notes. Thank you for listening to this podfic. Please don't forget to leave comments and kudos for the original author, and remember to leave Paxac plenty of love in the comments on the podfic. Thanks for listening.